Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
My Family Thinks I'm Crazy, a podcast where I, your host, try to give you some tips on how you can explain all this weird, wild, crazy conspiracy stuff to the people you love most. Because that's what I've been trying to do for the past 10 years with no success.
I've been telling everybody that I give a minute shade.
And they don't want to hear it. They're just like, oh, here we go, Mark. Off again with your...
Mark being Mark again.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's the thing about podcasts is when you're on the air, and it's like therapy, you know? If I can't talk to my family about this stuff, I'll talk to you, Matt, and all our listeners.
You'll just tell your whole podcast.
Yeah. So who are we talking about today, Matt?
Can't get in.
Yeah, you know, in Israel, they vaccinate everybody. Israel's way cooler than this lame place.
So then go to Israel.
I tried. I couldn't get in.
I was talking to David Icke on Monday, and I congratulated him on the 30th anniversary of his book, And the Truth Will Set You Free, And the Truth Shall Set You Free. Because it in that book was all the information that they just released on the JFK stuff. And his was out in 1995. So it was a full 30 years that that information has been available to the public. If you knew where to look for it, if you knew who David Icke was, if you were interested in these topics, it's all there. And so I laughed at that, and I had to congratulate him on being so early that people forgot. You know, it was a full generation early that he was writing about this. But I'm not, you know, I'm never too enthusiastic when the government decides that it's going to declassify some other government form, right? I never believe them. And it's a limited hangout if ever there was one. You know, they're going to disclose some of it. But as long as people recognize that this is not all of the information that there is about JFK, then fine. I'm glad we're talking about it again. I'm glad Israel's getting dragged into this, as they should, because they were deeply involved in it. I'm glad that people are starting to ask questions that they didn't ask before. But I am not delusional. And I know that the government is not going to release all the information about how the government was involved in covering up the murder of their president, or involved in the carrying out of the murder, and why these... And David and I had a good talk about James, Jesus Angleton, and what a bloodthirsty Zionist that guy was, and how he was in charge of the cover-up. You know, like, oh my God. Like, yeah, this is a huge red flag. So good. I'm glad people are talking about this, even though I know it's not all the information. In the same way, I'm glad that people are talking about Jeffrey Epstein, even though I know they're not getting all the information in that either.
You just heard author, podcaster, and the owner of Activist Post and NaturalBlaze.com, who joins me, Mystic Mark, here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Thank you for tuning in, and enjoy this conversation with Charlie Robinson.
You did nothing. You knew about the prank. You could have stopped it at any time, but you didn't say a word. Silence is violence, Kyle.
What? Dude, are you just gonna stand there and listen to this crap?
I don't even know what to do. If you ask me, this whole pandemic has been a giant waste of time. Oh my God.
right. Ladies and gentlemen, here we are back again on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. And joining me for the fifth time, and I've joined him, I think, once on his podcast, is Charlie Robinson, host of the Macroaggressions podcast, and since he's last been on the show, the acquirer and now manager, leader behind Activist Post, which if you haven't checked out activistpost.com, it is an incredible resource and a good way to stay informed. And, you know, with all these alternative spaces being encroached upon, I'm glad to see you, Charlie, taking a corner of this alternative space with Activist Post. So without further ado, welcome back. And yeah, tell us about this new position that you have at Activist Post.
Yeah, thank you. I agree. I love Activist Post. That's the reason why they reached out to me. I've been reading articles there for 10 years, and I had been vocal about it, about how I liked it and how I would submit articles. When I was writing my third book, I was taking chapters out of that and I would send it in to the owner of Activist Post and test it out, see how it looked, see how it went with the audience, and stayed in touch with them over the years. And I got a message from them last summer, and they said, "We've been doing this for 15 years and we're thinking of doing something new, but we don't want to sell Activist Post to somebody who's just going to like part it out for like the mailing list, or, you know, buy just the domain because it's worth something or whatever. We really would like to see it continue going. And we've got to get the right person there for it. And would you be interested in buying the company?" And I said, "No, because that's crazy." And then I thought about it for about 2 days, and I realized that I had to. I realized that it was such a good fit for what I was doing. Ideologically, they're completely aligned with me. You know, I mean, we feel the same way. It wasn't going to be like I was taking Activist Post away from cooking recipes and changing it into conspiracy or anything like that. I mean, what they were doing was the same sort of things that I'd been doing with Macroaggressions and with the books, just in a different format. And so I said yes, and bought the company in an all Bitcoin transaction and started the process. I mean, I agreed to it in the summer of 2024, but said, you know, let's launch it. Let's wait and finalize everything until the last week of December. We'll do that. And then in the meantime, I'm building out a brand new version of the site, because the old one was heavy and it was old and it didn't work well on mobile. And so I wanted to make sure that this one was clean looking, very, you know, not cluttered, and secure and fast on mobile. So we've done a lot of work to it. We built a whole brand new website and launched it on January 1st. So I created more work for myself, which I tend to do. And I'm now the editor, which is fun because I get to be, I might as well just call myself the DJ, because I get to curate the music, you know. I get to pick what goes on, and like, here's a great story from anti-war, let's talk about this. Here's Whitney Webb's new article, let's put that in. Derek Bros has something. I added a podcast section because I think that that's important, because I know that a lot of people don't necessarily sit down and read an entire article. They like to maybe listen and get their information that way. That's cool. I do too. And so we added a podcast section. We added a crypto section because, let's face it, it's a huge component that's not going away anytime soon. And we've got activism on there as well. So there's 8 different categories, but we wanted to make sure that we stayed true to the original Activist Post mission of really promoting activism. So we've got to have one of those categories there. And we've got a lot of news, empire, economy, health, tech, you know, so there's a lot of different, whatever you're into, it's over there. And it's just never going to be censored, because I would be the one censoring it. And I'm certainly not going to be doing that. So it's a place where writers can have their articles, you know, delivered to the general public in a way that they don't have to look over their shoulders. They don't have to edit their articles and think, oh God, what if he reads this and doesn't like this one paragraph that I've got? We're accepting a variety of opinions on things here. And so I think that it's a place that people can bookmark. I didn't build an app for it. And the reason was I didn't want to centralize control into the hands of Apple or Google, which is easy to do. And I watched them do it to Zero Hedge and crush their app and just not approve it and spend a bunch of money and do all that. So if you want it on mobile, just open a browser and go to activistpost.com. There's a secondary site that I bought as well called naturalblaze.com, and that is alternative medicine. Alternative health. It's a great place if you're, again, it's whenever you talk about these conspiratorial topics, it inevitably leads to health. And the reason that they built two sites instead of just one was because of the importance of alternative health and how it's really a huge driver of where we're going as a society here. We're so unhealthy mentally, physically, in every way. And Natural Blaze gives you an opportunity to find out, read some articles about health in a way that would nowhere would these articles appear in the mainstream. Like, it's just, there's the sort of stuff I put up on there. There's 0% chance that CNN.com would ever run it. So that's good. That's what I want. I don't want articles that are widely available to the general public. This is where you go to find subversive content that's fantastic and interesting and relevant. And I'll tell you what, man, if you get your news from the people who write articles that I republish on Activist Post, it's like living in the future, because you'll be hearing about concepts and talking and reading about things that the mass media won't cover for a year and a half, if they cover it at all. And when they do cover it, there'll be some slant to it. So you'll hear things and you'll go, oh my God, like, wait a second. I read that on an Activist Post like a year ago. Yeah, right. That's we're about a year ahead of the mainstream on a variety of topics. So it's a great resource. And when Whitney Webb and Derek Brose and Ryan Christian invited me to be a part of the Independent Media Alliance, I let them know that I was in the process of building out this site. It happened this last summer. And I said, this is going to be a great resource for all of us to have our content played on a platform that's not going to censor it, and it'll be widely available to everybody. So if you're interested in articles from Unlimited Hangout, the Conscious Resistance Network, Last American Vagabond, all those articles, they're all coming on Activist Post as well. So it's a one-stop shop. You can find it all in one place.
That's awesome. Yeah, and especially now with search engines being absolutely unusable, you know, as far as looking up anything related to health, you're just getting a bunch of really nonsense posts from WebMD and all these other pharmaceutical funded sites that just turn you back to pharmaceuticals. You know, could be anything from, you know, you have a rash, or you're wondering, you know, what the best supplement for hair growth, or, I mean, I'm trying to think of examples that don't have anything to do with me, but both of those are things that I recently looked up. So, and I had no luck as far as finding something that could be a solution. I did find some information that helped me, but with less and less resources available, it's good to know that Natural Blaze could be a source for specifically that.
Yeah, and you could kind of treat it like a search engine. Mm-hmm. You can go in there and pull up, just there's a variety of categories. Mm-hmm. You can go to one that's like Big Pharma, if that's something you needed, or holistic remedies, or whatever. You know, you click on something and it just pulls up
right. All
the articles that are in that sort of vein. So it's great. And same with Activist Post as well. You can go in there and go, I'm looking for. I just know it's crypto related. Just click on crypto, and it'll just give you a big drop down of everything that's in there. So you can narrow it down a little bit that way. But yeah, I agree with you. Search engines are garbage. the articles that you find there are, you know, you have to know exactly what you're looking for, and you have to know the sources. You have to know that these sources are not good. And if you're just a average consumer of information and you don't really know like what's what, and you just go on there and you maybe don't even make it off the first page. And that's every single article, if it's health related, it's going to have a big form, a slant to it. So if you're looking for that information, you're going to feel like you're going crazy. You're going to know it's out there, but you just can't find it. And that's frustrating. And that's another reason why I thought that this would be a great resource for all of us to be able to find information to help, you know, to research things that you're looking for. If you're interested and you're about to do an episode on technology, like go to Activist Post, go click on the tech section, go read through all the recent articles that are about technology, and that'll give you some ideas about like what's going on. So there's a lot of ways that you can use this. But if you are just outsourcing your critical thinking to the mainstream media, you're cooked. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of, the mainstream media has been pretending to cover this JFK file release, but I haven't seen anything substantial from mainstream sources. What I have seen are a couple of the alternative sources taking apart the 80,000 pages or however many documents that were released. And there's definitely some interesting information that I've heard. Have you taken any time to look into the JFK files directly? When I went to the website, I was a little intimidated. I'm like, oh, I'm on whitehouse.gov and I'm about to download all these files directly to my, I'm like, maybe I should wait till I get my above phone laptop to do this. And I just stopped.
Exactly.
You know,
it's, yeah, totally. I was thinking the same thing. No, I didn't do that. I didn't do the deep dive into it. I tell you what I did do. I was talking to David Icke on Monday and I congratulated him on the 30th anniversary of his book, And the Truth Will Set You Free, And the Truth Shall Set You Free, because it in that book was all the information that they just released on the JFK stuff. And his was out in 1995. So it was a full 30 years.
Wow.
That information has been available to the public. If you knew where to look for it, if you knew who David Icke was, if you were interested in these topics, it's all there. And so I laughed at that, and I had to congratulate him on being so early that people forgot. You know, it was a full generation early that he was writing about this. But I'm not, you know, I never too enthusiastic when the government decides that it's going to declassify some other government form, right? I never believed them, and it's a limited hangout if ever there was one. You know, they're going to disclose some of it, but as long as people recognize that this is not all of the information that there is about JFK, then fine. I'm glad we're talking about it again. I'm glad Israel is getting dragged into this, as they should, because they were deeply involved in it. I'm glad that people are starting to ask questions that they didn't ask before. But I am not delusional. And I know that the government is not going to release all of the information about how the government was involved in covering up the murder of their president, or involved in the carrying out of the murder, and why these, and David and I had a good talk about James Jesus Angleton and what a bloodthirsty Zionist that guy was, and how he was in charge of the cover up, you know, like, oh my God, like, yeah, this is a huge red flag. So good. I'm glad people are talking about this, even though I know it's not all the information. In the same way, I'm glad that people are talking about Jeffrey Epstein, even though I know they're not getting all the information in that either. Just the fact that they're having to reconcile with there being a intelligence-connected pedophile sexual blackmail entrapment operation that was being run in New York City, Palm Beach, and the Virgin Islands, and Santa Fe, by a guy who has CIA, FBI, and Mossad ties, is good. I'm glad we're talking about it. I'm glad that now that in the public's mind, that sort of thing exists. They know that that's a thing, and that they know that, you know, they might not have all the details, but at least they're in the realm of talking about it. So, you know, like I'm glad they released the JFK stuff, but I'm also not, you know, I'm not going to pat them on the back for it ever. And this information should have been released before David's book came out in 95, but it wasn't. So, you know, it's just, it's tough to take them at their word for with anything. You know, here's the documents on it. Okay. Well, as we know, any good disinformation is like 97% truth and 3% lies, you know, just enough to throw you a little bit off, maybe make you think it was this group instead of that group, and the rest of the story be good. So, you know, you have 80,000 pages, doesn't mean they're high quality, and they could all be leading you in the wrong direction. But I'm just glad that people are understanding that, you know, I mean, for what it's worth, Lee Harvey Oswald was not the shooter, and there were multiple shooters, and there was a lot of fuckery that happened with the body in the aftermath, and the footage is all wonky, and the people that were in Secret Service agents, or you can see them on video getting called off of the car, throwing their hands up like, what are you doing? Like, why are you calling me? You know, why are you pulling me off the security? You know, so it wasn't an incredible lapse of judgment. It was made to happen. And I think that the idea that they could murder our president in broad daylight and nobody really know who did it for a long, long time is a testament to how deeply embedded and dangerous this group is. That is willing to, hell, they want you to watch it. They want you to see what happens in broad daylight. They want you to understand that the world's different from that point forward. And so for whatever sort of benefit we can get, I'm glad people are finally talking about it again.
I feel like in what you just said, there's something that I've heard from specifically Michael Hoffman. I don't know how familiar you are with his work. I definitely encourage you to get him on the podcast and interview him yourself. But it seems like the entire JFK assassination event, in a way, was to create the conspiracy culture that we're in right now. And it, like, the double-sorted nature of, yeah, we just killed your president in front of you. What are you going to do about it? You know, that sort of thing. And it's almost like, and again, this is kind of just coming from Hoffman, but he puts it as like an occult initiation where we're all initiated by experiencing that conspiracy and then going and trying to figure out who did it.
It's like, it reminds me of Pixar movies where you watch them as an adult and you're laughing at, there's almost two movies in one. There's one for the kids and the kids laugh at some part. And then there's some throwaway kind of line that they mention at the end, and the adults laugh at that because they know that's a reference to something else. So it's the same movie, but depending on your perspective, how old you are and what your level of brain development is, you're seeing two different things. And that's kind of how I feel like these events are. So like a 9/11 or a Kennedy or something. On the one hand, the general public gets their version of the film is, oh my God, it's terrible. Somebody killed the president. Those 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters flew airplanes into the building. Oh my God, it's terrible. This is terrible. And then there's a second message being sent, and that's for us, the group that sees through all the bullshit. And that message is, we know that you know that we did it, but there's nothing you can do about it. And we want you to know that. That is the scary part of it. that the role of Israel could be kept out of the JFK assassination for 60 years is just, you almost have to stand in appreciation of their ability to keep it out of the news, you know? Diabolical in nature, the things that they have done to make sure people don't talk about that. But nobody talked about that for a long, long time, until it doesn't matter. Until Ben Shapiro can say, well, what's the difference? It was a long time ago. You know? So for us that see that, or you see 9/11 and you go, I know you fuckers did that. We've got all the evidence. And the response, the sort of the feeling you come away with after 60 years in the case of JFK or 20 years in the case of 9/11 is, I still know you did it. You still haven't been held accountable for it. And the general public doesn't know you did it yet either. So it's very demoralizing, I think. I think that that's not, I don't, I think that they're fine either way. If you know it or you don't know it. If you don't know that they were involved, fine. You're just scared to death for the rest of your life that the president might get shot again or that Arabs might take down buildings again. But if you do know it, if you do see through it, then they're fine with that too, because then you know who you're dealing with and you know that you're not going to be able to stop them. And that is a separate kind of message that's being sent. That's the demoralization message of don't even bother. We're in control of this operation. We have been for a long time. So I think we're in that small group that sees what's going on. And that's why you kind of sometimes feel like the normies just have it right. I mean, they just don't know what they don't know. But like, we know what we know now, and we're never going to unknow it. And for the rest of our lives, we're going to know that nobody was ever put in handcuffs. Nobody who was behind the killing of Kennedy or the taking down of the Twin Towers is ever going to be led away in handcuffs. That is tough to internalize.
Well, and I feel like there's a lot of truth there, but I'm curious to be more exact and precise about who that they is, because it seems like there are contradicting factions at work in the events of JFK's life. We have his father and their relationship with the mob as a family. But then we also seem to have a link somewhere with the Catholic Church. And this is where, you know, in recent conversations, we've sort of spent time talking about the Jesuits and the Vatican and their influence. But I'm curious, you know, where do you stand on, you know, the who's and the what's and where everybody fits in? Because we've heard a lot about the CIA. We've heard about now Israel and the Catholic Church, the mob. There's these really blurry lines between what separates them. And it seems like you're of the opinion that those boundaries don't really even matter because they're clearly working as a unit. What do you think? Is that a fair assessment?
I always think of these things as a Venn diagram of just interlocking circles where you can be in multiple groups. You know, you can be part of, you know, you can be this CIA and a Zionist, you know, so you can fit in a couple different categories. I think the problem with someone like JFK was that if you drag down all the people, drag down to the police station, all the suspects that might have wanted him dead, you've got a lot of people. That's the thing that's what really sort of created the best obfuscation, was that when you get to the end of the movie, the whodunit, like everybody had motive. Everybody had a, you know, the high ranking people inside his military who wanted to go to war with Vietnam, he wasn't enthusiastic about it. He had sent troops, he had sent money, but he was not enthusiastic about doing it. They wanted that. So there was a reason right there. His beefing with the mob and the crackdown on sort of this, you know, the things that his brother was doing as well. Certainly, the mafia has whacked guys over lesser things than that, right? So there's a reason there. They sort of drummed up the anti-Castro Cubans. I don't think that was really much of a thing. I think that was more of a smokescreen. I mean, you know, he was having problems with Cuba. Did they want to murder him? I'm sure they'd love to. Were they actively in the process of doing it? I seriously doubt it. But the group that had the most to lose were the Israeli Zionists. And they were getting hammered on two different fronts, if not more. But one was the Dimona nuclear power plant. And Kennedy was like, that ain't happening. And the second thing was labeling AIPAC as a foreign lobby, as a foreign agency. And he wanted to do that. They were definitely against that. And then you take into account who was on deck. Lyndon Johnson was on deck as his vice president. You go, well, who are his allegiances to? Well, he was a hardcore lunatic Zionist, out of his mind by every metric. And so you've got motive and opportunity and a backup plan. And the backup plan is going to do all the things that the current guy wouldn't do, which is get us balls deep into Vietnam and allow the Israelis to steal our nuclear technology and not come down on AIPAC and make that, you know, let them be an exception and not hold them to the same. Like, that's all that stuff happened in the aftermath of Kennedy getting his brains blown out. So we know who's behind it. They were the ones that had the most to gain from it. And they're also the ones that you heard the least amount about moving forward. And then you factor in guys like James Jesus Angleton, who was described by two Israelis as being, as he's more of a Zionist than we are. And the guy's like number two in the CIA, right? Or whatever. And so that's who did it. You know, like that's who did it. Somebody from their group. And, you know, his beefs with the mob. Well, who runs the Italian mob? The Jewish mob, with Bugsy Siegel and all those guys. And all of that led back to Kennedy as well. There's connections there. So, you know, if it's a one-off situation, I could understand that you could maybe say, like, well, you know, I guess Israel was in a real bad spot. But when you go to 9/11 and see Israel's fingerprints all over that as well, now you've got a pattern. And so this is the part that people like to dance around. And is it this group? No, well, no, it's not always those. It's not Israel, the entire country. It's a segment of their government, the Zionist component, Zionism being a political designation, not tied to religion or anything like that. You can be a non-Jewish and be a Zionist. And it doesn't mean because you're Jewish that you're automatically a Zionist. It's like a Democrat or Republican, something you can opt into as a title. So it's a very small group. And by the way, with 9/11, it wasn't limited to them because they got help from that deep state Catholic group, Leif Serkel, and a lot of the people there. So that was all the white devils in the Bush W administration, like Cheney and Bush and all those guys. Those guys are a different faction. So you asked if they work together. The answer is yes. Sometimes their interests align and they work together. And with 9/11, it was a joint venture between the PNAC Zionists inside the Bush administration, coupled with the Leif Serkel WASP faction of George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and the like, Donald Rumsfeld, Larry Carlucci, all these guys. So that's how these things get planned. It's typically multiple reasons for wanting someone dead or some event to happen. And then extremely thorough planning. And then they do it and use the media to drive the getaway car in the end.
You are listening to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. For bonus episodes, ad-free content, and the video version of every episode or most episodes of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast, sign up on patreon.com/MFTIC or myfamilythinksimcrazy.substack.com. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll be right back after this quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you about my favorite new sponsor. That's Mood. I love Mood because they're providing affordable, accessible, convenient, and transparent cannabis that's 100% legal and grown on small, pesticide-free American farms. That's right, American cannabis for American listeners. And it's 100% legal. They've got a full selection of cannabis products. I was a huge fan of their Tangy flower. Wow, it really brought me back to when I had first tried Tangy, and it was incredible. So if you have any doubts, try Mood for yourself, and I doubt you'll be disappointed. Use the promo code CRAZY and get 20% off your first order at mood.com. That's 100% federally legal cannabis, pesticide-free, delivered directly to your front door in a discreet package. Mood.com, promo code CRAZY, and trust me, folks, you're going to love this stuff. I give it the Mystic Mark guarantee. And Mood is going to back that up because not only do they stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, you get 20% off your first order with promo code CRAZY. When life's song falters in the night and courage seems to drown, hymns lifts your spirit anew so desires can fully abound. For strength and passion to reign supreme when love's dance calls to play, hymns offers remedies that ignite your flame and help extend your stay. If dormant flames in passion's den leave your heart feeling withdrawn, hymns fuels the fire with ease and care, reviving where it's gone. When tailored cures to fan the spark, no doctor's door you need to seek, reclaim your confidence and zest through hymns' discreet technique. For men who face such silent storms within the heart's domain, hymns ushers comfort quietly with solutions that remain. Holy online bespoke to you, removing burdens, lightening strain. Renew yourself with whispered ease. Let passion's song again be free. Start your free online visit today at hymns.com/crazy. That's hims.com/crazy for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/crazy. The featured products include compounded products, which are not approved nor verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality by the FDA. Prescription required. See website for details, restrictions, and important safety information. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Yeah, there's a lot of strange things going on with that whole group of people in Dallas. Something about a French mercenary, I think, came to light through the documents. I'd never heard that before, which makes sense considering the Vietnam predication of this, because Vietnam was a French colony. I mean, it just doesn't surprise me that France is somewhat involved. But you just also, bringing up George H.W. Bush, reminded me of something I found while looking through a nostalgia website where boomers go to write about, you know, things they experienced in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And I started getting into some Deer Island articles about the Skull and Bones sort of summer home up in the Thousands Islands of New York. And I found an anecdote from a woman who had overheard a conversation with George H.W. Bush that had chilled her to the bone. And when he was later president, she had called, you know, and made a whole fuss about it and did a whole, they did a whole report, you know, George H.W. Bush, Skull and Bones, Deer Island, etc. But yeah, it's very interesting to see his, you know, overlap in that whole case, considering Skull and Bones seems to have a sort of religious, in my opinion, like a almost Zionist approach to their Protestant Christian ideas. Like there's a very much a Zionist aspect to all of that. So the fact
they can can appreciate it.
Yeah.
They see it in the Zionists, and the Zionists see it in them, that George H.W. Bush Enterprise group that he ran, the second CIA. It was like the CIA outside of the CIA that he ran, this massive, it was just called the Enterprise. And there was always a bit of this kind of a religious tint to it. It always felt like that there was something. It wasn't just about dominating business. It was about dominating with their religion as well. It's not in the same way that the Zionists do, because they really fall back on their religion quite heavily. But
well, in essence, they're
the
all
Catholics have a deep state as well.
Yeah,
it's super dangerous.
I think what I've kind of concluded with what I've been looking into, and this could just be my own speculation or maybe others that I'm unaware of agree, but I think the reason that they all link up is this sort of proto, or not proto, but sort of utopianism idea that is part of Zionism. It's a part of a lot of the Protestant Christian denominations, this fascination with the Book of Revelations and creating this part of the world where heaven will essentially overlap with the physical earth, right? That a city can be created in such a way that it will actually bring heaven into the earthly realms. Like this is a deeply religious concept that goes through a bunch of different religions, but specifically with Christianity and Zionism.
Well, they're a dangerous combination. Hmm. The Christian Zionists have also been monumentally duped by the Jewish Zionists that have just completely conflated the book to them and created this wild reflexive defense mechanism that the Christian Zionists have for anybody critical of Israel. It's very weird. It's like brainwashing.
Yeah, that should be an indicator of something. Anytime people have a reflex like that. There's another interesting name in what I saw others dig up out of the JFK files. Joe Biden is named in the JFK files.
What did it say about old Sleepy Joe?
It said that he's a traitor, and I don't know anything else because, I didn't read the documents myself. But, yeah, Awaken with JP did a quick video on it where he showed some things that other people had dug up, and that was one of them. that Joe Biden is somehow a traitor involved in this.
Oh, well, I mean, he's a traitor. Yeah, I don't know if he's involved in that.
Unsurprising, but yeah, how totally old would he have been? He would have been a young man, probably just getting into politics around then, right?
He started in politics in like the early 70s.
Okay. So that was probably when he was in college.
So I don't know what he was doing before that.
Huh. Yeah. I have yet to see anything else on that. But the other interesting point is that, and again, this is all stuff that has been out there. As you point out, David Icke wrote a very comprehensive breakdown of all this. There's some other books that contain bits and pieces of the overall story. But one that I had been familiar with was from, I always mix up her name with another author, but the author who says that she was basically Lee Harvey Oswald's estranged lover, or not estranged lover, but she was a partner of his, and she's written a book about Lee Harvey Oswald and how he was actually a patriot and thought he was doing a good thing and thought he was, you know, just going to take a shot at the president to basically spark up a revolt against communism, like to play this role. In his mind, he thought he was going to pretend to be, you know, a communist terrorist, and then missing this shot at JFK would then cause America to go and finally deal with Cuba, which is according to this version of Lee Harvey Oswald's account. Yeah, this is what he was really there for, and then how he got embroiled in the whole magic bullet scheme, which we know now is just utter nonsense, and it's more likely that the bullet, you know, was fired, or multiple bullets were fired from different directions rather than one magic bullet coming from wherever Lee Harvey Oswald was.
I can hear Corey Hughes' voice in my head screaming about all of this.
What's his opinion? Oswald. What's his opinion on this? Because I'm not very familiar with Corey Hughes' takes.
Yeah, he wrote a book called A Warning from History that I wrote the foreword to.
Okay.
About JFK. Yeah, I mean, he says it was Jack Valenti who took the shot, the guy who later became the head of the Motion Picture Association of America for the next 40 years.
Hmm. Wow. If anyone's going to stop
that guy was hardcore Zionist.
Yeah. Well, and we know, you know, Meyer Lansky and his mobsters were involved in this whole situation too.
Yeah. And what's interesting is that with him as the head of the Motion Picture Association for 40 years in the aftermath of that, one of the interesting things that Corey pointed out that I would have never really, I would have to confess to being completely manipulated by this, is that he says, you know, if you notice starting in the 70s and then the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, all the mafia movies are about the Italian mob. But who really runs the show is the Jewish mafia. But they control the Motion Picture Association of America, so they make sure that those movies aren't, as if they're told at all, they're not popular, and make it so that the Italian mafia, taking the bulk of the spotlight, was actually better for them. I thought that was an interesting thing to recognize.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You don't see the Meyer Lansky movies. But no. You see the ones about the Gambinos. And
no, you see the ones that Meyer Lansky paid for, which are about
of demonizing the Italians.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where we get all our stereotypes and cliches. And, you know, I'll admit I grew up with a lot of Italians who thought that because those movies existed that they were somehow connected to the mob. And it's kind of laughable.
That's
but
funny.
Yeah, that's interesting. My great-grandfather was actually a photographer for the newspaper, local newspaper, and he was fired at by mobsters up in Cheshire, Connecticut. He was doing a story on one of their hideouts, and they noticed his car parked down the block and took some shots at him and his buddy, who then flee
the
area. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a little
bit
of mob history in my family from the other side of the from the other side of the aisle of justice, you know, the folks who are investigating the criminals. I think that was the case, though, is that they were Italian mobsters, but they obviously were overemphasized. And yeah, maybe it was all to create this situation that we're in now, where it seems like Israel has a tremendous amount of sway over big tech and the military-industrial complex.
Yeah. They have a fantastic technology program, and their Unit 8200 group is like the best. And then they are encouraged to, after they are fulfilled their amount of time serving, if they want to go into the private industry, they're encouraged to start companies as well that do that. And then they find private equity for them. You know, they find, they open doors to Silicon Valley. We just saw the Google buying that company Wiz, which is a Unit 8200 company. They just bought themselves a bunch of spies. So this is part, this isn't new either. This goes back to Ghislaine Maxwell's dad, you know, and the Promise Software in the 80s and what they were doing with all that. So like, Israel installing backdoors has been going on for a long, long, long time in the technology world. Nothing's changed. And that's just the reality of it. And Trump's guys, you know, he's clearly like an Israel first guy. So Palantir, which is Peter Thiel, which is Elon, you know, they're all there in that same group. That's a company that has Israeli fingerprints all over it as well as the CIA. So it's, the technology has already been compromised.
Well, and we know that the CIA was an admixture of people from the World War II aftermath, not just Allied soldiers, but Axis powers as well. We had a bunch of Nazis come into the United States, and it feels like, and this is gonna, we're getting into super controversial territory here, Charlie.
I know.
I know you're not afraid to get into these deep waters, but just so you know, I'm probably not going to post this on YouTube, so feel free to speak candidly.
That would be a good idea. I think that's, yeah, I think that is a smart idea.
Yeah. So, but I do think that there is a sort of deep connection there, where maybe depopulation eugenics has a origin that has now been obfuscated, because now when we think of the eugenicists, we think Nazis, right? Is this a little bit of a switcheroo going on? I don't know the proper logic term for this kind of thing, but it seems like it's a convenient, you know, trick to
well they rebranded eugenics. You're right. They rebranded eugenics. Sir Julian Huxley was the head of the British Eugenics Society, and in the 60s he was having a hard time, you know, the popularity of the brand was kind of down, you know, because they're advocating for mass murder and all. So what he did was he said, we need to rebrand. So we're not going to be eugenics anymore. We're going to become transhumanism, because it sounds like a futuristic name and it sounds great. But in fact, it's just the rebranding of the term eugenics. And transhumanism is what's being pushed as the fourth industrial revolution by the World Economic Forum. So it's not, we need to be careful of the terms of the, you know, the meaning of these words. When they say transhumanism, what they actually mean is eugenics. When the general public hears transhumanism, they think if you lose your arm in a car accident, they'll give you a robot arm. You know, well, which is true, but that's not
right.
Or you're going to, or eventually I'll get Neuralink, and then they'll put, you know, That's transhumanism.
Well, and again, in this kind of like Orwellian sort of this sub rosa way of speaking, transhumanism and trans rights are simultaneously growing. And I think transsexuality, again, not trying to offend any of our audience members, because we have gotten a comment once or twice from people who happen to be outside of the normative gender spectrum saying, don't hate on us. We're not hating. We're just trying to let you know that there are maybe darker agendas at work that are manipulating you towards not being able to reproduce, which is a, you know, seems like something that a group of people who thought the rest of the world were not the chosen people, maybe they would want to advocate for us losing our ability to procreate. And I know that's an incredibly, you know, charged statement to make. My words, not Charlie's words. You can speak as you will to that point. But yeah, I just think that there's something deeply connected to this religious ethnicity that just wants to be treated as a religion, even though they're very clearly an ethnicity. And then they're also at the heart of this transsexuality movement, which was a part of the Weimar Republic, a big agitator of the German Nazism. I mean, it seems very much connected.
The trans component of it is there for a reason. You know, we're on this transhumanism kick. And this is part of what I was talking to David Icke about, was I've saying, well, what if they have injected you with enough mRNA technology through the vaccines that they've made some sort of like calculation that because you have this much mRNA technology in your body, you are now technically no longer a human being. You're now transhuman. And I asked what the legal ramifications of something like that would be. Because would the Constitution apply to you if you were deemed to be, oh, sorry, you're not actually human. These are human rights. You're technically transhuman. So therefore you don't have any rights. And now you can be patented. And we talked about that, about the patenting of GMO crops. And then as it spreads into the neighbor's organic cornfield, the Monsanto seeds sprinkle in there as well, them getting sued by Monsanto and losing their farms over it. So, you know, how dark do you want to go, man? Because the transhumanism agenda could involve deeming a certain segment of the population no longer legally human and therefore without rights and representation. So an instant slave class.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't see where they would easily be able to do that. That's what would be the most draconian thing that could happen in the United States. But it seems like it's already happening. It's already, you know, going on in our midst, and people are unknowingly electing to be a part of it when they got jabbed. And I wonder, what are the ramifications for those of us who were brave or stubborn enough not to? Is there some sort of meiosis effect, or, you know, miasma that can occur where, you know, we're sort of tainted by those around us who did take it, you know, because we're breathing the same air and exchanging all these little microorganisms with people constantly, you know, whether or not you got jabbed or not, you're going to maybe become transhuman. What do you think of that?
I mean, you've heard stories of that happening where, like, the spouse wasn't injected but would feel like shitty from shedding. I don't know. I don't know how much of that is. I don't know how much of that is real, yeah, as far as like shedding and whatnot. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying I don't know. I know that the people that have been jabbed multiple times, the ones that took two and then took the two boosters, are experiencing things that are, the wheels are falling off for them. I'm seeing it. I'm seeing examples of it in my own life. It's a little, it's, it starts as a little thing here and there. And next thing you know, like you're having a vaccident. A vaccine accident where you just kind of spaced out for a second or two and smashed into the car in front of you. Again, I'm seeing that in my own life stuff. And I'm concerned. I'm concerned because I think a lot of us were wondering if the jabs were going to be like, you take the vaccine and then like 2 days later you fall over dead. Or if it was more of like a 10-year time bomb. That it sets on your immune system. Like, well, what are we looking for? And we got a little of that, right? We got a little of the people just falling over and, you know, getting dragged out of the vaccine, you know, station where everyone's getting injected. But now, you know, we've seen the athletes like collapse and the newscasters collapse and everything. But like now I'm starting to see the wheels fall off with a lot of people. And I mean, I don't know how, I don't know how much longer that lasts. And it makes me think of the Deagle report because, hello, we're in 2025, you know, are they still on schedule? I mean, like,
speaking of, I don't know if you're familiar with Bibhu Dev Misra, but he's written a book about the Kali Yuga. And how it just ended yesterday. As a matter of fact, he pointed out that it would be March 25th, 2025. And he joined me last year on the show and we had this conversation. So it just so happened that yesterday was the end of the Kali Yuga. And what that means is we're entering, according to the ancient Vedic cycles and other ancient cultures cycles, we're entering a period that reflects what our ancient cultures called the flood, but it's not going to be a flood this time. It's going to be reset by fire, right? This is what the Greeks called ekpyrosis. So maybe we're already seeing the foreshadowing of that with the wildfires and the, you know, somewhat artificial burnings of places like Maui. And I guess it's hard to argue that the Southern California fires weren't connected to wildfires, but there is a case to be made in some areas of Southern California. I've heard that there are reports of anomalous heat patterns.
My best friend lost his house in Pacific Palisades, and man, I'm sick over it.
And
I lived in LA for 25 years, and you get fires there during the summer, not in January.
Yeah.
Not in January, you don't. And I'm sorry, like after Maui.
Right.
And all of the nonsense surrounding that.
Well, and not to mention the police officer who's now been indicted in the P. Diddy situation. He was not only the chief in Maui, but the chief in Las Vegas during the Vegas shooting, which you and I have talked about before. And I mean, it's just been a string of tragedies in the past 10 years, some of them natural, some of them, I mean, and when I say the term natural, I think all of it is artificial. It's all manufactured. But
feels like the Truman Show.
Yeah, like natural, whether it's a natural disaster or a mass shooting, it's all artificial. Like we can see through the veil clearer than ever. In the past, it might have been harder to track down and maybe it wasn't happening as much. But now I think that is the clearest evidence there that something strange is going on.
Ole Damegard's got me looking for bicycles and shoes. Every video I see, every photograph I see of one of those mass shootings, it's got me looking for bikes and shoes.
Well,
I see those, then I know.
Didn't Ole say that the Trump shooting was completely 100% staged, the Butler?
I don't know. Actually, I don't know.
Yeah.
He might have. I think he did.
I spoke with him about that, and I got a lot of pushback from the audience. I still don't know what to make of that. Part of me isn't completely convinced, just sheerly because of the way that Matthew Crooks was dealt with. Of course, you know, I mean, an active shooter, they're going to shoot back at him, kill him, but it just doesn't, it feels strange. The whole thing feels strange, you know. Yeah. But Ole, yeah, Ole was pretty convinced that it was a completely fabricated event, as he tends to say.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it, yeah, I have questions about it too.
Yeah.
But that was at a time when I was just like, I was dealing with other stuff. I was like, right. I'm going to let somebody else figure this shit out.
Right. Right.
I'm not investing all my time in it. And I know there were people that were like ballistics experts saying this. And then it's like, good, please figure it out and let me know. But I don't have the time and the energy to dig into whether or not the Trump shooting was.
Yeah. Well, and that's a tangent. Sorry to take us down that. We were talking about the fires, and I saw Gavin Newsom recently issued a statement which was saying something along the lines of, oh, yeah, you know, this is a great opportunity for progress, something along those lines. And it's just, wow.
LA has already had plans in the works for changing the density and rezoning. And you can't rezone if everything is currently there. The only thing you can do is if, you know, I mean, God forbid you had an earthquake or a fire or a mudslide or all three of those things, then we get this out of the way. And I did an episode on that right when it was happening, and saying like, this is what you need to be looking for. You need to start listening for Gavin Newsom talking about multifamily and changing zoning in his speeches. They're going to start talking about it pretty soon. And sure enough, within weeks, they were talking about it. And that's what they want to do to Pacific Palisades. It's like, fuck you guys. Nope. This is some smart city, 15-minute city nonsense.
And it's corruption. It's corruption. It's
documented too.
Yeah.
They have their project 2025 or whatever it is for LA or 2028. They've got an Olympics coming up. They've got a World Cup coming up. This is meant to be. We got to get.
Clearly this stuff has global ties, right? Gavin Newsom is not doing this because some, you know, California billionaires are paying for him to do it. This is something that is being paid for, I think, to sort of divide the United States and create these, strong divides where you have a complete division of the left and the right, and geographically, where like California becomes a place that is completely dominated by left-wing politics. And it seems like that's being funded from the outside, like China, the UN, these Bilderberg-type forces.
Gavin Newsom is a WEF young global leader.
Right.
He has been for 20 years. So he's in the cult. He's connected to Pelosi, that whole family. You know, he's part of that. He's got Getty oil money.
Mm.
And his dad used to manage the Getty's oil money. And he's got a little empire there.
Right.
And now he's trying the PR campaign to try and act like a normal human being, which is impossible for him because he's not. He's a scumbag. And he's trying to humanize himself with podcasts and things like that. It never works for them.
Mm.
They never have the ability for self-reflection to see that, like, no, you're so unlikable. The last thing you should be doing is talking. The less of you, the better, but they can't help themselves.
Well, you need to be completely unself-aware to be a politician on that level to some degree. You need to have like that thick skin of like a vessel of a person.
You know? That's the only way to survive in that. I'm not even saying that he's wrong for doing it. It's probably a survival tactic once you get to that point. But Gavin Newsom and his entire crew that has come before him have wrecked California.
Hmm.
I lived there for over 30 years. I know what it used to be and I know what it is now, and it is a disaster. And it's 100% their fault. So, you know, do you want that after Trump? That will be the question.
Yeah.
Or Kamala's going to be the governor. She's talking about
running
that.
In California.
That would be fantastic. That'd be the final nail in California's coffin.
Yeah. Wow. She would be the Kali of California, truly. Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. I hadn't heard that one yet. So what's next for you, Charlie, as far as our notes go? You wrote depopulation. We touched on it, but what else have you been looking into as far as that topic goes?
Well, it's just, it seems that when you're talking about world government, and I often am, or world governance, however you want to kind of describe it, there's a, you can't talk about that without also talking about depopulation, because they go together. You cannot have a world government with all these people. So whenever they're talking about that, they're also implying, though they go directly out and come right out and say what they want to do, but it's always, you should always imply that when they're talking about world government, they're saying, and we want the rest of these people dead, you know, because that's always what happens when these forces come together. They want depopulation. So yeah, so I've been working on that. I've been working on that actually over the last 3 years through macroaggressions episodes that were sort of about each one of them, and then taking that and expanding on it, writing about it. So that's what I've been working on, because, you know, you just come across, you can't help but come across it when you're writing about like control structures and things like that. You find that it is not conspiracy theory that there's a depopulation agenda. The only question is, how deep are you willing to look into it? Like how far are you willing to go into it? Because it's hitting us from every direction. You know, it's not just war, you know, it's slowly poisoning your food. It's sterilizing your water. It's lowering your IQ. It's all kinds of things that play into eugenics. And once you wake up to it, once you sort of start looking for it, you see it everywhere, and you find out how connected it is and how they are actively trying to depopulate the planet.
And what do you think could be motivating this? Because I guess my instinct, or what seems logical, is that more people to exploit, more money to make. If you're greedy and it's purely about greed and power, the more the people you have, the more power you have to wield.
You would think that, and that is a logical way of seeing it. But the way Henry Kissinger would tell you, it would be the more people, the more opportunity for things to get out of control. And what we like is, we like it the way it is now. We know we can control it. So we want to be constantly thinning the herd in these third world shithole countries. 13 of which Henry Kissinger put in his 1974 memorandum, National Security Council Memorandum 200, which outlined the United States government's policy towards the third world in general, and these 13 countries in particular, was that of, quote, depopulation. That is in Kissinger's memo. And that was December 10th, 74. In March of 75, they started depopulating in the Philippines and in parts of Africa. And the group that they used to facilitate this was USAID. And that was in 75. Wow. So I keep waiting for the general public to move past USAID as a media propaganda outfit, which they are, or a regime change operation, which they also are. I'm waiting for the general public to start to unearth the fact that they're also part of the eugenics movement and that they have been actively depopulating the third world for the last 50 years.
Right. Well, I think that's been the suspicion in the conspiracy community, you know, growing up glued to the TV like many in my generation were. You see those sort of virtue signaling commercials where they have a, you know, an African child with like a fly on his head and, you know, they're zooming yeah. in and they're like, for just 3 cents a night or a month, right. you can support Umbunku so he has food right. in his village, you know? And it's like, when you look into it, you realize that the money that they're giving these people, A, not only is it not enough to sustain them, but B, it creates this codependency cycle that ends up hurting them in the long run. Like when the whole South Tom Park Shoe is, debacle.
When South Park is spoofing you, right. you know you're part of the problem. Right. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I wish I got into South Park at a younger age. I think I was young enough to watch the entirety of it, but I was just too young to like get the violence and all the other stuff when it was first out. So I didn't get into it until I was much older. But yeah, South Park's a great resource for that and a good time capsule.
They made a spoof of my two business partners for like, it was like episode one, I want to say like season 25 or something like that. I don't know. It was a couple years ago.
Okay.
Because we were doing this HGTV home renovation show called Flip or Flop Vegas. And so my partners are a husband and wife team, and the wife is like this cute blonde, and the husband is this ex-MMA fighter who also is like this really good-looking dude who's like hanging drywall and all that stuff. And they spoofed the intro to our show and did it on South Park, and so that it was 100% crystal clear that was who they were doing. And I sent that clip to my partners and they just fucking died laughing. They thought they were so honored that they got the treatment from South Park. Cause they love it. They've got a great sense of humor.
And you have to wonder,
I was like, you guys have made it. Like when South Park is messing with you, you seriously, that is like the coolest.
Oh, they're absolutely.
They're like, we agree. This is great. We're telling everybody.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Use it in marketing, promotion. Yeah, no, it's cool. I wonder, though, what South Park-isms or things that they've revealed have gone overlooked. Because, yeah, they certainly are behind a lot of hilarious memes that counter this or balance the scales of, you know, the media insanity.
I appreciate that they found a great way to deliver, you know, to show how preposterous this world is in a way that's super funny. Mm. And, you know, I think they've woken up people to a lot of the bullshit from watching that. And it just goes to show, like, you never know how you're going to reach people. You know, like I started writing books, which is great. And I love writing books and I'm working on a book right now, but then the podcast came out and everything like, you know, and then I finally turned my Octopus book into an audio book. Cause I was like, oh shit, like, duh, I should have that. And people really prefer that. So like, you never know what method it's going to be that you reach somebody. And like, for South Park to be doing it as long as they've been doing it and getting like a young demographic red-pilled on a bunch of shit, phenomenal. And that Matt and Trey went to the Oscars on acid is one of the greatest things ever.
It's an anomaly that their rise through Hollywood, their sort of impunity at which they can criticize and not get canceled or... You know, they're a force to be reckoned with, and it's definitely a mystery. I mean, who knows who they're connected to and on the inner sanctum of Hollywood?
I don't know, but I've never seen them apologize for anything, which I love.
No, never and they've never, down, never and they've never shilled for any like corporate or stupid interest. You know, for the most part,
as far as I'm sure. the Casa Bonita is, they bought Casa Bonita here in Denver.
I have heard about
and
that.
And they renovated it, and it's supposed to be really nice. My daughter's been to it. She got me a hat from it. Yeah. I was in it when it was the old Casa Bonita. Uh-huh. But then Matt and Trey bought it and spent like a shitload of money.
Yeah.
Like $30 million to renovate this restaurant. But this restaurant does like insane business. It's the weirdest place you'll ever be. There's like all kinds of crazy shit going on in there.
Yeah, I've heard that's and where I, a lot
and
of
it's
their
in
focus
the show.
Is.
They put it in the show a bunch, so that's why it's so popular. But they bought it, and I'll report back to you once I go. I'm sure I'll go at some point.
Yeah, you should. You should do a full report on it because
I heard it's
pretty exclusive. There's like a big wait list to get reserved and all that. So. Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder about them. I'm sure there's, you know, it's not all bad. I don't like to be so nihilistic or cynical to think that, you know, everyone in Hollywood is corrupted. But then again, there is that sort of revelation of the method concept. And it's like maybe they are the jesters, the tricksters that are allowed to mock the king, whereas anyone else who tries to get censored and, you know, they do it. Veiled with a lot of humor. But anyways, it's always a pleasure to reconnect with you, Charlie.
Good to talk to you too, man.
Yeah, I look forward to your next book, and we'll cover it in detail when it's published. But do you have an idea of a title for this? It's just sort of a concept at this point.
Still working on it. I was in the middle of it last summer, and my mom got sick, right. And I wound up getting distracted with that and putting the book on the back burner. So one of those things, I just need time to get back into it. But I, you know, it's just talking about dark side of, you know, the depopulation side of world government and what that looks like and what it has looked like and what it could look like in the future. So when I've got it done, I'll let you know.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you for putting that work together because, yeah, it's not an easy subject to stomach, I'm sure, but someone needs to put the information out there and help spread the truth. So, yeah, I commend you for doing so, and I appreciate all the work you do with Macroaggressions, The Union of the Unwanted, all the other shows you're working on. I know those are just two of many. What's the other show you're doing?
Day Zero.
I always want to call it Zero Hour for some reason, but
That's a logical thing. Yeah, that just started as like, that'll be the show that gets me kicked off the internet or locked out of my credit score.
We all need a place to rant, right? We need a place to...
That one. We're like, it's a comedy show.
Right.
It's a comedy show. Because we've got a black guy on there who sounds like a white guy and he's got a southern accent. So for people that are just listening to the show, they're very confused. So we always have to kind of let people know because we talk about all kinds of, you know...
Well, all of that is going to be...
stuff.
All that is going to be linked in the episode description. So for folks who want the offensive stuff, they can go straight to that. Macroaggressions, where I've been a guest once, and I hope to join you again in the future.
Let's do it.
Until next episode, thanks again for joining me, Charlie. Thank you for everybody tuning in. And we'll see you on the next episode. Until then, immerse yourself in the moment, wherever you are, in the now. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to this episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast, coming to you on a Saturday, a rare Saturday episode, but we're going to be jam-packing April with episodes, so don't worry, we've got some really great ones in store. I don't even want to mention it because it's something that I've only told the Patreon audience. That's one of the privileges you get when you support the show. You get insights as to what's on the books, what's scheduled next. So lots of great stuff on the way. And the only way to find out is to sign up right now, patreon.com/MFTIC or myfamilythinksimcrazy.substack.com. Big shout out to Charlie Robinson. Check out his podcast, Macroaggressions. Check out his book, The Octopus of Global Control. And check out
his newly acquired activist post and thenaturalblaze.com. Who knows, maybe we can get some of my Substack articles, if I can write some new ones, on the activist post. That would be, or maybe even Natural Blaze, depending on what's going on. I've been thinking about filming some of my cooking ventures as I've been really getting into a groove, cooking some interesting stuff. Who knows? Let me know if you're interested. And yeah, that's all I should say for now. If you want more, help me out, support the show, support our affiliate sponsors, and support the show. Check out rawoptics.com. Get yourself some blue light blocking lenses. I wear them whenever I'm looking at the screens. I wear them pretty often. Even though people are saying I look like the Unabomber with the frames I chose, those aren't the only frames you can get. You can get all sorts of different styles. For whatever reason, I chose those. And yeah, not permanent. Maybe we'll go and switch them up. Got to reach back out to Raw Optics, but use the promo code CRAZY with Raw Optics. Use the promo code CRAZY when picking up a hit kit, the number one way to stay lit. Use the promo code CRAZY with the AquaCure, George Wiseman's invention, delivering hydrogen Brown's gas to you, a life-sustaining macronutrient that most people are deficient in. So go and check that out as well. So many amazing affiliates. Shout out to Isaac and his Oregonite. That's Oregon made Oregonite. And yeah, always a mouthful and a tongue twister there. But we love our affiliate sponsors, all of them. BrainSupreme.co, which is more than an affiliate sponsor. They pay for ad space and help fund the show, so shout out to them. And yeah, also we've got Vibe Med X, a new affiliate sponsor. Use a promo code CRAZY if you'd like some Shilajit from Vibe Med X. Above Phone, of course, get yourself the Supreme Privacy Package with Above Phone. And that is it for the ads, that is it for the promos, that is it for this episode with Charlie Robinson. Shout out to him, and shout out to all of you for listening to the show. Look forward to some new episodes coming out this Monday, Wednesday, and possibly Friday as well. And until then, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now.
MFTIC. Broadcasting the moon matrix from the lunar surface. They want you confused, like you never knew your purpose. Hopping through the portals, dismantling the machine. My family thinks I'm crazy, I can't believe what I've seen. Memories of a war, the Pleiadians and Anunnaki. Stuck within the genes of a copy of a human body. DNA fractal, the universe within me. Epiphanies of science is hoarded by the Illuminati. Puppet masters know the power of the mantra. Repeating mad lies till it has an effect on ya. Subliminal messages hijack your perception, tricking the population with holographic projections. We see through it, and the system is unraveling. I'm astral traveling through the library of the Vatican on a sacred journey. I embark with the squad, forever spitting truth like Mark on the pod. Gotta know the facts, never hold back, cause I ain't getting caught up in the soul trap. I dissect the fabric of reality, looking for the answers, searching through the galaxy. You might be feeling stressed out. Depression, anxiety is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a sick society. You don't even know how powerful you are. We the ones who gonna expose the whole facade. I awoke in a deep underground military base. Zero recollection of how I got to this place. Alien corpses floating in glass cylinders. Must have been extracted when they crashed into us. Animal hybrids contained in the cages. A lion with the eagle head. Monkeys with reptilian faces. Losing my mind and I'm feeling desperate. I look around the room and I see no sign of an exit. All of a sudden the wall flickers away, revealing a hangar full of spacecraft. My getaway, I run to the nearest one. See a guard, knock him out, robbing for his plasma gun. Hop in the ship, take the controls. They highly intuitive, I figure it out easily. Lift off, accelerate through a tunnel until I see the light. Fly into the sky, get flanked by six F-30s.
35 is far.
Facts, never hold back, cause I ain't getting caught up in the soul trap. I dissect the fabric of reality, looking for the answers, searching through the galaxy. You might be feeling stressed out. Depression, anxiety is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a sick society. You don't even know how powerful you are. We the ones who gonna expose the whole facade.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.